Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back for the next hour of the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. And on the other side of the glass is where a lovely, lovely breakfast spread from our friends at Wishbone Restaurant. Jasmine, fantastic.
It's totally fantastic. Everything is good. And speaking of Wishbone, I also want to plug their Mardi Gras extravaganza that they're having. They're having it on Tuesday. It's from 6 to 9 at the restaurant, and it's going to be live music, and it's an all-you-can-eat Cajun buffet.
Tuesday, February 17th.
Yes.
Yeah, all-you-can-eat and live music, Cajun buffet. What's better than that?
What else can you do? I was like, what else can go wrong here? I mean, this is a big party, so it's great.
Well, and since we can't make it down to Nolens, let's bring a little Nolens to Chicago. Absolutely.
Right.
Again, friends at Wishbone Restaurant, thanks so much. Soul Food Restaurant, Cajun Creole. It's 1001 West Washington in the West Loop. By the way, this carrot orange juice.
Isn't it superb?
It's outstanding. I wasn't sure what to think of it, and it's just fantastic. I mean, it's all fantastic.
Words can't describe.
Have you posted the pictures already yet?
I'm going to post the pictures on our Facebook page.
Yes, so if you go to the facebook.com/thesundayspin, you'll be able to at least be able to see the wonderful spread that we got this morning. Well, thanks again to our friends at Wishbone Restaurant. And now joining me on the phone is Robin Johnson, my good friend, who's a consultant and coordinator of the Midwest Matters Initiative at Monmouth College in Monmouth, Illinois. And Robin also hosts a weekly public affairs radio show, Talking Politics with Robin Johnson. That's on KBUR AM 1490 in Burlington, Iowa. And Robin, I wish you were here in studio today so you could kind of share the breakfast with us.
Yeah, I don't know about that carrot juice, but the rest of it sounds pretty good.
It's carrot orange juice. Trust me, if I say it's good, then you know it's good, right?
I trust you implicitly, so yeah. I'll,
you know me and food, so. Well, Robin, thank you very much for getting up this morning and joining me here on the Sunday Spin. And I kind of wanted to touch base with you about last week was Bruce Rauner's very first State of the State address as governor, barely in office a month. And what was your main takeaway from that message of his?
Well, you know, Churchill once said, make no small plans, and certainly Governor Rauner has followed that philosophy to a T. This was quite a speech labeled the turnaround agenda, and it I didn't get to make the speech in Springfield, but it was reported to be 30 minutes, and I went through the speech, read it, and counted at least 25 major policy initiatives in it. So that works out to about one initiative per minute in this speech.
And we don't normally hear in the past, and I'm talking Republicans and Democratic governors, you never hear that many major policy initiatives in that speech.
No, and he even left out some major things that he got some criticism for regarding pensions and the budget. But this is a really comprehensive speech, and it shouldn't surprise anybody. The major word that stuck out throughout was reform. And since Bruce Rauner declared his candidacy for governor throughout the primary, throughout the general election, and since then, he's called for basic reforms of state government and also to reforms to make our business climate more competitive. So it was an interesting speech, a lot there. Some folks criticized him, saying he should have focused on a few more things. Most people, I think, understand that the state is on the wrong track. Things are broken, and some things need to change. And a lot of people I talk to, anyway, seem to feel that they know that some bitter medicine's coming.
Well, and I think, you know, in part, that's why Pat Quinn lost the election, was just that things didn't seem to be going right. It was almost like kind of like a weariness with Pat Quinn. And, you know, given the fact that Rauner really didn't enunciate many specifics during his campaign, this State of the State speech at least provided the first kind of details of what he plans, what his agenda is as governor.
Yeah, I think when he delivers his budget address, that's going to be very important, and there'll be more details provided there, obviously, because the state's running low on money. As you know, our child care agencies are quickly running out of funds, and there was just a report yesterday that our correction system is running low on funds. So with the reduction of the income tax money coming in on January 1st, the state's really on the verge of a crisis in funding basic services, and I think there's a sense of urgency that the governor's brought. He's been in our area, my neck of the woods here, the last couple days. He was in Peoria yesterday and Moline. I'm sorry, Peoria 2 days ago and Moline yesterday, giving basically the same speech. It was a friendly crowd. The hosts were the Chambers of Commerce, and he really hit on the union, anti-union themes of his State of the State message. But he's taking this around the state in 4 days. He's going to campaign around the state on trying to accomplish this agenda. I mean, it'll be interesting. I mean, I think with this many initiatives, you'd say maybe five or six would be a record of accomplishment. And we'll see how far he gets in accomplishing these measures. And as you know, the major obstacle will be the fact that we've got a Democratic legislature in place.
One thing I'm curious about is, and he's kind of repeated this, is that he wants all of these initiatives passed together as one package and not as individual items to be considered separately. And, you know, that's just not always, you don't see that very often in government acting in total kind of concept.
We made reference yesterday, I think it was, to packaging a minimum wage increase with some of these other reforms. How balanced these compromises are, what's going to be in it for the Democrats is something that obviously Speaker Mike Madigan and Senate President John Cullerton are going to have a lot to say about. You know, when I had you on my show, the big question surrounding Governor Rauner was, will he try to govern as Scott Walker or Jim Thompson, meaning Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, who came in with more of an ideological approach, passed some of these anti-union measures to rein in public employees and unions in particular. The other path would be former Governor Jim Thompson here in Illinois, who had to deal with a Democratic House. He had a Republican Senate for the most part during his term. But it was a compromise, and I remember those days. It was a compromise atmosphere, and they had the four leaders, the four tops, they were called, would get together with Governor Thompson at the end of the session. They would cut deals, and everybody would be happy and move on. Which approach will he take? He's still sending mixed signals. I think he's reached a handout to the Democrats on some issues, saying he wants to cooperate, he wants to get things done, but yet the rhetoric still, and it could be just part of a strategy to appeal to his base with some of the anti-union rhetoric going around the state, gives some proof to the notion he may try the Walker approach. Although, again, with a Democratic legislature, some of these ideas are dead on arrival.
We're speaking with Robin Johnson from Monmouth College. Robin, stay right there. We'll be back with more right after this. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio. And way out west in Monmouth, Illinois, my good friend Robin Johnson, consultant and coordinator of the Midwest Matters Initiative at Monmouth College, Monmouth, Illinois. Robin, we've been talking about Governor Rauner's state of the state address. And is he dropping the G's out there when he was out in the Quad Cities?
Yeah, I mean, the really interesting backdrop to all this is that, as you know, this $20 million fund has been established by the governor and some of his allies in the business community to, they're pretty open about it. It's a fund to reward their enemies and punish their friends on some of these votes. And there was a story going around that he used some pretty harsh language in a private meeting with some, with the Republican caucuses, basically saying, vote for me or else, vote with me on these 10 issues or else. I talked to some friends who are in the legislature on the Republican side and said that some of this story was probably embellished a bit, but that the word is there that, you know, that Rauner expects this his agenda to pass, and he's not making any bones about it. And interestingly, a lot of the legislators I've been talking to are saying what Speaker Madigan's been saying. It takes 60 votes to pass a measure in the House and 30 in the Senate. The Republicans have 47 seats in the House, 20 in the Senate. They're going to need some Democratic votes. Where are they going to get those votes? It's hard to tell. I suspect there'll be shifting majorities to pass some of these, and some of the governor's proposals aren't very palatable to Republicans either, such as broadening the sales tax, which might not play with some of the base in the far conservative wings of the party. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this all plays out in the next 6 months.
Now, I thought it was interesting the reaction of the Democratic leaders in the House and Senate. You had Senate President John Cullerton basically accusing the governor of being divisive in his rhetoric, setting up these issues about reducing efforts to reduce the power of organized labor, prohibiting campaign contributions from public employees unions, which of course that was one of the major funders for the efforts to try to defeat Rauner, both in the Republican primary as well as the general election. Things about these what the governor calls empowerment zones, what the critics call right to work zones, allowing municipalities to set these up where people would not be obligated to join unions for the labor that occurs there. So you had Cullerton on the one side saying divisive, and then you have Mike Madigan on the other side who said, well, nothing that the governor proposed he would label a non-starter. What do you think's going on there?
Well, that's typical Mike Madigan. He's just not playing his cards on the table yet. He's going to sit back and see how this transpires, and will react how he usually reacts, slowly. You'll be able to discover what his agenda is going to be, where he'll allow his members to compromise with the governor, and where perhaps they're going to hold strong and defend their base as well. There was a stark difference, as you talked about, in the reactions of the two leaders. And both have veto-proof majorities. It's going to be up to them, really, to see how much of this passes. And I think they're going to be very concerned about being seen as causing gridlock in Springfield and holding back any types of reform that, I think the public sees the need for overall and is ready for. The particulars of it, it's going to vary with specific measure. But I do think that people understand that some changes are going to have to happen after some years of, let's face it, some bad governance that has allowed us to get into this position.
Well, and I agree with you that Madigan's holding his cards to the vest. And of course, there is that issue of, if there is gridlock or there isn't progress made, Rauner now, with his wealth, with that $20 million kind of seed money for campaigning, it seems like, Madigan wanting to make sure how the waters are tested here about whether Democrats would wear the jacket if nothing progresses.
Yeah, I mean, if you remember, late in that last campaign cycle, some significant money went in to the Republican opponent of Frank Martino, who's represents the Spring Valley area. And Frank Martino, even though it's a competitive district, the Martino name is gold there. It's like the daily name in Chicago. And Frank Martino, well known. Most people didn't think he had any problem at all. Some late money was dumped in, and Frank barely was reelected. I think some downstate Democrats in particular, and those in more competitive districts, are going to be facing really interesting pressures and dynamics to keep in line with their leadership, Madigan and Cullerton, or the fact that they could face a well-funded challenger in the next election cycle.
And that's really the advantage that Madigan and Cullerton have had as far as being the funders versus and as well as drawing the map lines that help elect a Democratic majority. I want to touch one thing with you before we have to go to the news here, but I wanted to talk to you about the issue of 2016 in Iowa. I mean, you're in one of those great locations where you get to see things from both sides, not just the Illinois side, but also the Iowa side. And, we look at the polls, we see kind of who's been cruising through Iowa. Is anybody really kind of striking up a chord, or is it kind of waiting to see what Jeb Bush does?
Well, I think it's going to be like the flavor of the month.
That's what it was last time.
Yeah, Governor Scott Walker came in, gave a really good speech to the Iowa Freedom Summit, which is an event sponsored by the very conservative Republican congressman from Western Iowa, Steve King. And he gave a fiery speech, and lo and behold, the Iowa Des Moines Register Bloomberg Politics poll came out, and he was at the top, of although by only 1 point. But it shows what just these short news cycles can do to the polling numbers. So I've always thought Walker would be an intriguing choice just because he's from the Midwest. He would likely probably carry Wisconsin, could very well carry Iowa, and put some states in play for the Republicans that perhaps they haven't been able to compete in as much. But this is going to go up and down, and every statement made by these candidates gets magnified. Senator Paul, Governor Christie got caught up in the vaccine controversy this week and took some hits. Mike Huckabee generated some criticism with his criticism of the Obamas for allowing their daughters to watch Beyonce. Some of these issues are serious, some not so, but it's just going to be going up and down where, again, any little issue becomes magnified. I will tell you, Rick, that I had on my show a couple weeks ago Craig Robinson, who has a very popular website called the Iowa Republican, and Craig's been involved in Republican politics for years in Iowa, a very respected voice. He said flat out that Jeb Bush would not win Iowa at this point. Now, predictions, of course, this far out are difficult. The caucuses are a year from tomorrow. But I thought it was interesting that he felt that Bush would not win the state, that somebody else is going to rise up and take it. So there's going to be a lot of interesting dynamics here, and it's a very diverse field in terms of region and ideology. And it's really going to be fascinating to watch.
Well, and you know, as I said, I remember just the last time, and literally for a story I did for Channel 9 before the caucuses, really did describe it, you know, with a graphic as flavor of the month, because every month there was a different candidate that was up in the polls there. But I want your opinion real quick, too, because I kind of have been asking everybody this about Iowa. How does Chris Christie play in Iowa?
I think he's going to have trouble there, Rick. I just think, based on the people I talk to, I think Governor Christie's the Sopranos-type personality, I just think it's going to be hard for him to relate to Iowans, and especially when there's so many choices there. I think he's going to face some challenges, although I will say the key guy in this, his name won't be on the ballot. It's Governor Branstad, who will be the longest-serving governor in American history next year. He had a major role in Iowa's major Republican victories in this last election cycle. I don't think he's going to endorse, but his hands were all over their efforts last year. And I know he and Chris Christie get along pretty well. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays. But my take on it right now is that Iowans probably won't relate very well to Governor Christie at this point.
That's Robin Johnson, consultant and coordinator of the Midwest Matters Initiative at Monmouth College in Monmouth, Illinois, and also hosts a weekly public affairs radio show, Talking Politics with Robin Johnson, KBUR AM 1490 in Burlington, Iowa. Robin, thanks very much for joining me this morning.
Rick, thanks for having me on.
We'll be back with more right after this.